So the character of Quicksilver is definitely going to be in both. In both, here I am saying both wrong again. in both properties, Quicksilver is going to be in both properties. That just sounds wrong. I sound Canadian when I say it that way.
Booth.
In both properties.
In both properties. All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 107. This is where we chat. We all chat about games and comics and other things.
Good morning.
Because that's what we do. How you doing?
Oh, I'm here to chat. How about you guys?
Let's have a little coffee chat.
Guys. All right. I have coffee. Do you guys have coffee?
I have coffee.
Oh, I ran out. I drank my last coffee this morning.
So we're down one member. It's just a dude show today. All bros, no lady friends.
Bro show. Wow.
Yeah, Hillary, she unfortunately was lifting something heavy while moving and
shaking my head no, because I said don't say this before the podcast.
And she dropped something on her bionic toe and had to get her bionic toe replaced.
There you go.
That was not my original joke, but
wait. She dropped it on her bionic toe and had to get her toe replaced?
Her bionic toe replaced. So
she already had a bionic toe.
Yes.
Right. From the dock incident.
She stepped on that rusty nail and
I remember now. Sorry, I forgot.
Had locked jaw and such, but she hopefully, will be back soon. We hope she feels better after her incident.
Yeah. Poor toe.
Wow. Okay.
Let's do the rundown.
Well, with that, on today's podcast, we actually have a lot of games to talk about, which is kind of exciting. We're going to talk about Combo Crew, Fuse. We played a tabletop game. I'm going to talk about a game on the 3DS called the Starship Damry. Ash is addicted to Borderlands 2, and I think we need to have an intervention.
Yes.
And what else is going on? I played some Gears of War 3. We just have a lot of stuff to talk about today. There's games available on the iPad that were available on the console. Like, there's all kinds of crazy shit going on today. So we're going to talk about all that and see where the morning takes us, if you will. So, Ash.
Let's just sit back, relax, and see where this goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ash, Lick, let's talk about your Borderlands.
Did you just say Ash Lick?
No.
You said Ash Lick.
I think you...
This is awkward now.
I think you joined two of my words that were not meant to be joined together.
Ash Lick. Well.
So what's going on?
Let's see. So I played more Borderlands 2, which is something I didn't think I'd be doing again for quite some time, because I already played a lot of Borderlands 2, but they came out with Krieg the Psycho, and I said last week that I gave him a shot, but I've been playing him, and he's a lot of fun. It's a really different style of play, which I guess I'll talk about in the review section. I've been playing Fuse with you guys.
Yes.
Yay.
A lot of fun. So Insomniac put out Fuse, which is 4-player co-op, and we got a chance to all play that together, which was actually a lot of fun. And other than that, I've been watching more documentaries. I watched The People versus George Lucas this morning.
What's that about?
Oh, yeah, how was that? I see it, and I've never watched it, but I see it. It's in my list all the time.
It's actually making me kind of mad. I'm like, okay. The reason why it's making me mad is it's honestly 90 minutes of people bitching. Like, they just it's 90 minutes people bitching about Star Wars. They do obviously give a lot of praise to Star Wars, but in the end, I mean, it's a solid documentary. It looks at sort of the impact that Star Wars has had over the years, but also some of the mistakes that George Lucas has made as, the creator of Star Wars. That's been a lot of fun, but, I'm looking forward to new stuff coming out. I want to play some new games.
Are you wearing a Borderlands shirt right now?
I might be, and this is not intentional. Yeah.
Subconscious.
This is the one that I got at PAX at, during media hour. So I wore this out this morning. I was running around. And I had when I went to the grocery store this morning, I had the kid that bags my groceries who had like braces and stuff. He's like, "Nice shirt, man." And I was like, "Yeah, thank you."
Did you give him your gamer tag?
I did. Here's my gamer tag. I do a podcast. Check it out.
You're the worst self-promoters in the world.
Matt, what are you doing?
So I did something nerdy, but a little different last night. My wife and I came back from hanging out with Ash and Chrissy, actually. And we're both music nerds and have been for a very long time and have both a ridiculous CD collection and a ridiculous vinyl collection. Before I moved to New York, we counted somewhere in the range of 1,300 to 1,500 vinyl records.
Truth. I can endorse that skill. For
you. And we sold about 500 to 600 of them before we left. So now we have, and most of them were cheapy, kind of like, you know, $2-3 records. It was good. It added a lot to the moving fund, but it wasn't like, we didn't make like millions of dollars or something crazy. But we still obviously have, and I don't know if you guys can see them, but we still have like 800 records, and they're all in. If, by the way, you have a record collection, the IKEA Expedit collection holds them near perfect. So I recommend.
Which you can now order that on Amazon.
You can order them on Amazon. Bum, but anyways, we started going through them last night. She wanted to sell some, and then we were just kind of looking at them, and I had hooked up the record player, so we've been listening to records a little bit more. And oh my God, guys, like just weirdly pulling ones out that I had forgotten I even owned and then being like, oh, I wonder what it's worth, and like looking them up. I think our retirement fund is like sitting behind me in bookcases right now. Records worth like hundreds of dollars for like a record. But yeah, we have like a bunch of Beck records, and I guess Beck is super sought after, and like every one of the records is $60 and up. It's like the weirdest thing. But then it was kind of fun too, because like Scott was saying, like, you got to sell them. And I'm like, I kind of don't want to even sell them. Like, I like having them. I feel like I'm going to pass them down one day and my kid will be like, oh, Mars Volta, who's that?
Yeah.
And then be like, oh my God, this is horrible. But then, you know, it's worth a lot of money. So that's good.
It's like, I'll put it right next to my mom's Joan Baez record, you know, and like you're, and then like our children will put the Mars Volta record next to that. And go,
yeah, exactly.
What is this?
Wait, are you and I having children together?
No, I was just trying to describe. Do you have any records from your parents that you know, like side?
Yeah, I have Rolling Stones, "Let Them Eat Cake," or "Let It Bleed," rather. Them Eat Cake. There's a cake on the cover. I have a couple of like Simon and Garfunkel records.
Speaking of cake, do you have any cake records?
I don't have cake. No, I don't. I don't.
Does
I think my.
Pretty?
My
cool.
prize, the one that I had that was like my prize possession is I have a first printing of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Ooh.
And I told Melissa, I was like, this has got to be worth money because it's got the posters, the original posters in it and everything. And we looked it up. And because those bastards printed that record like 15,000 times, it's worth like $10.
Like
there was
cares.
Like literally, there was literally like 30 repressings of the same exact record. I was like, yeah, this is not worth it.
Yeah, they know what's up.
But it was fun. It was really cool to go through and just see, like, it does feel like, for whatever reason, I don't know what you guys feel like, but for whatever reason, records feel like they have some weird intrinsic, like, value to, like, hold on to.
They're kind of neat.
They're just, like, things. They feel like relics, you know, like, they're neat to have.
Well, they kind of are. I mean, you know, you're collecting a piece of history. It's a medium that's not very popular anymore, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of neat to hold on to stuff like that.
And they don't degrade, really, either. You know, like, they do, but, like, in the best way. You know, like tapes degraded in a horrible, god-awful way where they just died and broke eventually.
Yeah.
But records kind of just get that old feeling to them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, other than that, you know, we played Fuse, which I did enjoy and we're going to talk about later. And I have been planning our D&D campaign more and more because you guys are going to be on a assassination run, essentially. Your team building right now to go take down a big bad inside of a city. So
neat.
It's pretty exciting.
It's good times, but I actually want to plan it. I got to get everything ready so that you guys can logically do it.
Cool.
How about you, Scott?
Of course, I played Fuse as well, and we all played a card game as well called Battle Wizards something 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 Skulls Fire Mountain.
It's called Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards Duel at Mount Skulls Fire.
Yes.
Wow,
there you go.
That's a hell of a name.
We'll talk about that in the reviews. That was fun. And then I decided to, it is now summer, obviously, so I started on my summer game pile, which included Yay! Gears of War 3, because that's how far behind I am. But, I mean, it's, like, I really do like this game, and playing through this game in particular sort of made me more interested in the story, because I feel like the content with the game and then the downloadable content mission, the ROM's shadow or whatever, creates, like, a good narrative, I think, to see different points in time and, like, how the war unfolds and everything. And I just... What's up?
Do you think they, like, games like that or Halo ever planned it from the beginning? Like, do you think, like, in the first game, they were like, this game's going to be awesome and we've already got, like, six stories planned out? Or is it just, like, the first game they were like, let's try to get us... Because the first one's story was a little thinner than the later episodes, right? Like, 2, 3, and it gets better and better.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that was cool. I will say that I'm going to... My conclusion is that I don't care for the AI. I'm not going to say it's bad, but here's the problem, right?
The thing, team AI or the enemy?
The team AI. Because the AI is great to a point, and that point is like shooting at the enemies. You know what I mean? Like, anything beyond like you needing the team to shoot at the bad guys, like, you're in trouble. So I it was really interesting because I played the first chapter with Ash and his wife. And I was like, this is great. We're kicking ass. Things are going well. And then I started chapter 2 with like 3 AI companions. And that's where it all started to go downhill. And it's weird because like sometimes you'll get downed and like your team will like run by you. And then like all of a sudden they're in like in a chainsaw duel with somebody else. And it's like, hey, look, like to the person that is sitting on the couch, the most important thing in this game is to make sure that nobody bleeds out. You know, like, that is priority number one, is don't bleed out, right?
Yeah.
And they just, like, they run by you, and sometimes they get, like, stuck. They can't, like, they're standing on top of you, but they can't figure out how to res you, you know? They're, like, jittering.
Yeah.
And then the other problem that I observed was, like, playing, like, PTFO. You know what I mean? Like, any time that the objective was to do something other than shoot at the bad guys, like... You know, doing stuff like towards the end where it's like, you need to shoot at this enemy so he doesn't do blah, blah, blah. And it's like, whoa, they got real confused about stuff like that. Or just things like tactics. Sometimes you're just like, hey, when I'm working on this boss, I need you to shoot at the other guys that are coming at me. And they sometimes they just don't grasp the concept.
So that's true. I can see that.
I think that with the, you know, what we're seeing with the computing power there is that like, they're making decisions about whether the game should look and feel and play awesome or the AI should be really, you know what I mean? Like, there's only so much memory to get pushed around there for them to pull that all off.
I know. And I know it's not that kind of game. I know it's really meant to be played in co-op. And I, you know, all that aside, I would just hope that maybe in the future there would be some kind of like way to command them to do things, you know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 Like, I think that's the one thing that Mass Effect really pulled off for me was like, that basic team control where you didn't feel like you had to control everything, but that you had the option to, like, if they were all getting just nailed with bullets, you could be like, get down, you asshole. Like, why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting killed. Get undercover.
But that being like, said, the AI makes excellent meat shields because they rarely ever die. And then when they do, they always res one another. Like, they'll never be the reason why you lost. Like, none of them will ever get, like, grinded into meat or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was a conscious decision. They do soak up like 10 times as many bullets as like a human person, so it's kind of good to have like one on your team because they are almost invincible, but then, you know, playing with three of them probably is frustrating. And when you were talking to me, you were texting me, I kind of realized that I actually never played through that campaign with all AI before. Like, I always played with a group. So I was like, yeah, they're great. And it's like, they were, I mean, like, they were, you know, the one member on the team that was impossible to kill. So I was kind of like, yeah, they're awesome. But
so that being said, I think it's actually, I mean, it was really great. Like, I don't know why I waited so long to play it, and I would definitely play it again.
It's fun. It ends on an interesting note, so I'm curious. We'll probably see, to be perfectly honest, some news about a Gears of War at E3 in a couple weeks. my money and is on them finally doing Emergence Day, because I've heard them say on record that the reason why they could never do Emergence Day, which is like the big, like the actual war itself.
Yeah.
Because right now we've only seen the aftermath. Like even in the first Gears of War, you're seeing the COG after they've lost the war.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never actually seen the war, right? So the reason why they said they could never do that is because they only had the Unreal Engine could only really produce like something to the effect of like a dozen AI characters on screen at the same time, which is why you only fight like little groups at a time. And what they want to be able to do is actually have, you know, hundreds on the screen at the same time, which
That'd
they're saying
awesome.
That the new engine can do. So I'm thinking that that's probably what we're going to see is Emergence Day. And that way they can get everybody back, not to say who lives or who dies, but, you know, they can get all the characters back and, you know, get to see the war from a different perspective.
And now it's
speaking of E3, guys.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. Keep going, Scott.
I was just going to say, and then it's...
Just say E3 again when you're done.
And then it's on to Jugement, and then after that, I'll have to wait until E3 to see what happens.
Speaking of E3, Scott.
Yeah?
News.
So E3 is right around the corner, and none of us are actually going to be attending in person, but... But
you say actually as if it were like, like a foregone conclusion.
Look, they just know that we're the three baddest hombres in gaming, blogging, and they are afraid of having us there.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's
what it is.
Because we're real gamers.
Our reputation precedes us.
Real with quotes around it.
Real. We are REEL gamers.
Real big gamers. Anyway,
the big fish.
Pick it up.
What's happening? So what we did want to announce the sweet beats in the background. We did want to announce that we are going to be doing a live chat from June 11th through the 13th, all 3 days of E3. We are going to be pulling you guys in and talking about E3 as it's happening, and we're going to be using a lot of your feelings and comments and things like that in an upcoming episode of the show. So if you want to know more about our live chat during E3, just follow us on Twitter, and that's at @nerdappropriate, and we will tell you a little bit more when we know a little bit more. But, you know, just keep in mind that we will be there in spirit, and we'll be watching from the comfort of our own houses with our pajamas on, and hopefully no one bugging us.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fantastico.
Oh, the last thing. If you were a fan of G4, you probably were a little sad when some of the, you know, when, of course, G4 dissolved. But rumor has it that the majority of their on-air talent is actually going to be working for Microsoft at this upcoming E3. So people like Kevin Pereira and Blair Herter and Jessica Chobot and Allison Hayslip and all of them, basically all of the castaways from G4, will more than likely be working for Microsoft at this show. So you get to see
like,
some old
familiar. Like during the reporting for Xbox Live and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's not too shabby.
Yeah. So
I mean, I can't like them now because it's Xbox.
Yes, I know.
Sorry. Yeah.
Cool. So
yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, so in our next news item, I was a backer of the Double Fine adventure game, which...
Did we get that yet? I was too.
No, like... we haven't.
Okay, just making sure.
Here's the thing, is their latest update, you know, because they send you update emails, and the latest update was, hey, we started another Kickstarter, and we want you to go check that out. And,
oh, boy.
Is it already at $1.7 million or no?
No, but I think after a couple... I think that this has cooled off a little bit because they're trying to reach $750,000, and I think in just 4 days they've nearly hit that goal, but it's not as like not jeez. Gangbusters like it was before, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember what's the name of the other game? The adventure game.
They gave it a name. Wasn't it like the Chalice or something, or is that the new one?
No, that's the new one. Oh, it's Broken Age.
Broken Age, yeah.
Yeah, so
the
I
Chalice
backed
is the new one or whatever.
Yeah, so I backed Broken Age, and then like they use that system to then direct you to another Kickstarter, which is called Massive Chalice, and it's purports to be a sort of a turn-based strategy
game.
Yeah, strategy cool. game, but with characters that what's up?
They're at 3.3 million of the 400,000.
No, that's for the other one.
Oh, that's not for the other one. Sorry. Yeah. You're right. Correct.
So the idea behind Massive Chalice is that it's going to be like a fantasy turn-based strategy game, but they state that it's going to be replayable in the sense that your characters will age and grow older, and you can either retire them or continue to use them. And I think you kind of build this empire through generations of gameplay. So,
jeez, hopefully yeah. It's in real time, so I can be playing when I'm like 104 years old. My character is aging.
You yeah. still have your MacBook Core i3.
Yeah, right.
It's the only thing that runs the game.
Did I mistake?
That's
that?
What you're going to sound like.
Turn-based tactics game. Yeah, turn-based tactics. So yeah, so the concept sounds pretty cool, and obviously, you know, Double Fine fans will back that. But I kind of just want to talk for a second about like doing a second Kickstarter when the first game isn't even out the door yet.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you feel, or let me rephrase this.
Help me make sense of this.
Have you received anything from any of your Kickstarters yet?
No.
Yes.
I've only received one thing. I've backed a lot of things. I probably backed maybe 6 or 7 projects. The only thing I've received is from Bria Grant's Best Friends Forever campaign. I got stuff from that.
Cool.
Didn't get everything from that, but I got some stuff from that.
Uh-oh.
But I mean, that's the thing. A lot of these, I haven't really received anything yet. The problem is that a lot of times there's no like, you will get it by this date. It's kind of just like, guess what? Like, we're going to give you some stuff eventually. And we talked about this before. There's no promise that you'll ever get anything.
So I've backed 9 things, and I have received 3.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
That's good.
That's 33%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a record from, I backed a friend who was making a record, got his record. The Calvin and Hobbes documentary is on its way, which I count as getting, cool. But they emailed me and were like, we're shipping. And then, I backed like a digital comic and I got that.
Nice.
I didn't actually, well, that doesn't count because I did back Best Friends Forever, but not enough to get anything from it. So mm-hmm. I guess that's 4 things that I would have gotten stuff from. But then the interesting thing is every game that I have backed, I have gotten nothing. I've backed 4 games. I've backed Double Fine Adventure, Shadowrun Returns, The Banner Saga, and Among the Sleep. Now, Among the Sleep I just backed, but the other 3 I backed over a year ago, and I've gotten nothing from any.
Yeah, with The Banner Saga, they say that because they got so much money, they're taking more time to make a bigger game. So
yeah.
The game looks great.
It does.
Do you guys find that the update system from Kickstarter is like borderline... I feel like it's great that I'm getting all these updates from these people that I backed, but at the same time, I'm also like, I don't read half of them because I'll get like 2 emails and I'm like, which one is, I don't read them.
I get emails from Kickstarter every day, and I get emails from Twitch like every single time I know somebody that like is streaming something, which is also kind of annoying. I realized I probably have to toggle that off.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll still probably back it, though. That's the sad thing, because it sounds like a good game, and it's Double Fine. So.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but this game, like, for example, Broken Age, you could pledge $15 and get access to the game when it's released. This game is $20. I don't know. It just, like, they want, like, $7.25. You know they're going to get, like, $2 or $3 million. It's just, like, I can't, like, in my mind, cannot make sense of this just yet. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's starting to get like, and maybe they don't, but it's starting to feel a little bit like, and we knew this was going to happen, but the big guns are invading Kickstarter and saying like, oh, look, everybody else is making money. Maybe I don't have to spend any of my own money on this stuff. You know, like,
right.
I'll just throw some stuff down and see. Like, I did want to share, though, because this has been making the rounds on the blogosphere. There were 2 actresses from Girls. Did you see this?
No.
1 actress from Girls and her sister. Something like that, made a Kickstarter to put a record out or make a video for a song that they wrote or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted like $10,000. And they were like, in the description, they're like, yeah, we didn't even know how to play music before this, but we just figured, why not? Like, we're just gonna, this is what we want to do. It's almost charming that I don't know how to play the banjo. And it's like, it's very Brooklyn sounding and very like hip and cool. And like, they wanted like $4,000, $5,000, whatever it was. As of like the first full week in or 2 weeks in, they were at $425 and like no one was backing.
Oh, wow.
It was like, not to be mean to them, but it was kind of like almost reassuring that you can't just throw any piece of junk on there, even if you've got a name, and get backed. You know, like, you actually have to provide some like, hey, I have expertise in this realm of some sort, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in a way I was using Double Fine to talk about a larger issue. I think in the specific case of Double Fine, they obviously have a pedigree. People love them. They say that they want to stay like as independent as possible, and that's why they're turning to crowdfunding so that they don't have to rely on a publisher to like source the money. So like, you know, all this stuff is good. It's just like, I think we are starting to reach a time where we want to see the things, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah,
but definitely. Anyways, like, you can go check out this game. It's called Massive Chalice. Massive Chalice. So that's pretty cool.
It's pretty good. I do agree. Like, maybe $20 is high, but maybe it's not. Maybe they're aiming to make a $20 game. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, as long as the content matches the price, then I don't really care at the end of the day.
I'm sure it'll be great. So,
yeah.
Let's see. So next up in the news, just a couple of quick things, just sort of to maybe a sign of the times, like KOTOR for their 10th anniversary was released on the iPad. You can get that for $10.
Did you see how this is getting controlled? Because I actually was interested because I've never played KOTOR all the way through. But if it's virtual sticks, I don't know that I can do it.
I mean, I really didn't look into it too much because I'm pretty sure I own like three different copies of KOTOR on different mediums. So yeah. I'm not going to pursue this any further. But
yeah,
the other thing I wanted to mention is that you know, there's been a lot of news lately that XCOM, the latest XCOM game, is also coming to the iPad. So
yeah.
And then to build upon that a step further, there was a story on Polygon where Take-Two Games wants to like hit a goal where they're someday releasing the same games like on PCs and the iPad at the same time. So
wow,
imagine like XCOM coming up for Xbox, and then at the same time you can go pick it up on your iPad.
Take-Two, man, they've been very pro gamer lately. They've been putting a lot of articles about, or a lot of blog posts about like what they want to do for gamers, and it's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah. It kind of baffles me that like the iPad can actually do that. You know what I mean? It's like it's pretty remarkable that it can do that.
Well, I mean, the newest iPads are like freaking quad core architecture with like, you know, 2 gigs of RAM or 4 gigs of RAM. Some of them have like 8. They're like basically a minor. It's a low power console essentially sitting in your hand. It's kind of ridiculous.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. The chairman of Take-Two Interactive, he has a funny quote in here. It says, for example, we're going to release a full mobile version of XCOM Enemy Unknown this summer. That's obviously a great way to make money because we're repurposing old content that's already paid for and the marketing expenses are low. It's well, like very like blunt.
Honesty.
Yes. That's like one of those posters with the cat and it says honesty at the bottom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they are a company. They are a business that wants to make money. And if they find a market that they think they can release in, I never played it on Xbox, but I sit around on my iPad enough that I might pick it up. So
yeah. So
it is a lot of fun. It's definitely a classic.
Just some fascinating news about gaming to sort of like keep perspective on what is happening in the world, you know?
It's all about control for me with the iPad, though, like how it controls, because the virtual sticks tend to be a nightmare for me. I'm not good at them. So
we will revisit this topic when we talk about Combo Crew later.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Combo Crew.
So Ash, all right, tell me about what I think is going to be the craziest Marvel movie that comes out.
This
in
is. Okay.
Times.
So for those of you who don't keep up with this stuff or don't really give a shit, there is another Marvel movie coming out August 2014, and it's in phase two. I guess it's near the end of phase two of the Marvel films, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy. And Guardians of the Galaxy is an old series that they've redone several times for Marvel Comics, and it deals with deep space and sort of the cosmic characters and like the larger scale of things in the Marvel universe. As a kid, it wasn't a title that I read. I was really into the, you know, the X-Men, and I was into the Avengers, and I never really got into the cosmic stuff just because it was way too out there. This new series is a lot like Star Wars to me. I read these a lot. I was up at that wedding a few weeks ago, so I plowed through about the first 20 issues of the new Guardians of the Galaxy series for Marvel, and I actually kind of fell in love with it. It follows this sort of ragtag band of they're assassins and they're freedom fighters and they're, you know, they're space cops and they're trying to save the galaxy from kind of this massive galactic war. Marvel was brave enough to actually allow this to become a film, which is weird because most of the characters are people that no one has ever heard of. People like Gamora.
And not people.
Yeah, exactly. There's a Rocket Raccoon, who is literally an anthropomorphic raccoon who has machine guns and is acrobatic and is sort of like, he's sort of like the Clint Eastwood of raccoons. He's like this, he's this badass little raccoon with a, like, you know, a number of different rifles and stuff. But, so the cast is not even, there's only, I think, one human on the entire team, and that's, Star-Lord.
And he wears a helmet the entire time.
And he wears a helmet the entire time, yeah. And Star-Lord, they've cast Star-Lord, and that's going to be Chris Pratt.
Do you really? Guys know?
Yeah, Chris Pratt. So
I didn't see that. I did see that. That's awesome. He's from Parks and Rec.
Yeah, from Parks and Rec.
He was in the Osama Bin Laden movie.
Yeah, Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty.
So they cast him as the human lead, who's Star-Lord, and that's pretty exciting. They just cast Zoe Saldana as Gamora, who's like one of the universe's foremost assassins.
That makes sense. She's green, though, isn't she?
She's green. She's totally green. So I don't know.
That's
what
good casting, though. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, she'll be a great Gamora. She also, her ability, she has a healing factor that's like triple Wolverine's. So she can kind of run up. And I think in the comic, the one that I read, she gets essentially like nuked, like all her skin gets melted off. And so she runs around with just like a hood on for like half the comic because her skin's all melted. So she's super cool. They just cast John C. Reilly in an unknown role. So we don't know who
he's going to voice. Rocket Raccoon.
I really hope he's not Rocket Raccoon. That is not who they cast him. Who else did they cast? They just cast Michael Rooker. And Michael Rooker, you guys may know him from Walking Dead and from, you know, a million other tough guy roles. He kind of has that really gruff voice, tough guy. And he's going to be cast as Yondu. And Yondu, for Marvel fans, is actually one of the Starjammers, the guy with the bow. I think he's one of the Starjammers. Or at least he used to be. Hmm. Let me see. They cast Drax the Destroyer. He's Dave Bautista, who I guess is a wrestler.
Oh, he's a wrestler, yeah.
He's a wrestler, yeah. So
maybe John C. Reilly will be Groot, and he'll just have like three-word sentences the entire time.
Maybe.
Groot's in the movie, I'm pretty sure.
Is he?
I'm pretty sure they said Groot was going to be in it.
I think they're saying that Groot hasn't been cast quite yet.
Oh.
And the last bit of news, this just came in actually today. If you're a Doctor Who fan, you'll probably be happy because I'm not a Doctor Who fan quite yet. I haven't. Have you guys ever sat down to watch that?
Melissa did, and she didn't get into it. I've never sat down to watch it.
I watched like, anyway, we're not going to get into that. But anyway, one of the companions who is Karen Gillian, or Jillian, I don't know how it's pronounced, but she was one of the latest companions on Doctor Who. She's just got cast as one of the villains, an unnamed villain in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh.
And so that's probably big news for Doctor Who fans. So they're trying to get, you know, trying to get the nerds in there, which is awesome.
They did some S.H.I.E.L.D. non-news, I guess, or was news maybe at one point that got canceled. But there was rumor that Taskmaster was going to be in the S.H.I.E.L.D. series.
Oh, cool.
But Marvel shot it down and said, no, he's not going to be.
What?
So, yeah. Everybody got really excited, too. So Taskmaster is this, like, sometimes villain, sometimes hero, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Who can immediately mimic any power that he sees, essentially. Mm.
Yeah.
Right. I think one at
it's
a time.
Mainly like fighting techniques. So like,
yeah,
if he sees like basically what he did with the Avengers is he saw how Captain America like could use the shield and then he'd be able to use the shield like with the exact same precision and the same with like Hawkeye's bow or anything like that. So he basically copied like everyone's abilities in the Marvel Universe.
And he got hired by S.H.I.E.L.D. at one point to kind of run around and manage things. He was part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. team and they so everybody was like, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I guess there was a rumored casting or something, and then Marvel came out and was like, no, he's not going to be in the show. Or ABC, one of the two, came out and said, not going to be in the show.
That sucks.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see. I still feel like that show could let them launch like C-level superheroes into the world without...
Like Rocket Raccoon?
I mean, it's weird because Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of like a bigger, like in the comic world, that's kind of a big series.
Yeah.
It's not a big series in the public by any means, but neither was Iron Man, to be honest with you, before Iron Man came out. But I'm talking like Taskmaster, like guys that no one's even remotely heard of that they could put into the world and just kind of see what happens and use them as characters. I think Luke Cage has been pretty much confirmed at this point, but
we'll see.
We'll see.
I guess while we're talking about Marvel stuff, the Avengers casting news, I mean, Joss Whedon basically went on record. He went on Fallon the other day and said, yeah, for sure, there's going to be Quicksilver and there's going to be Scarlet Witch. And if you're a fan of the X-Men or a fan of the Avengers, those are two incredibly fun characters. And the reason why he said he wants to bring those two characters in is because visually, from a storytelling perspective, their powers are really kind of unique. So they're going to be able to – Quicksilver has super speed. Which doesn't sound like the most dynamic thing, but if you think about it with modern special effects, super speed could be absolutely incredible. And Scarlet Witch has like cosmic level reality manipulation and spell powers. So she can like her basic power is she can shoot these bolts that manipulate probability. So she can make things like buildings fall down or, structural weaknesses, or she can make, things change their elemental properties and things like that. So she's super, super powerful. And the thing that's weird about them is they are the children of Magneto, which kind of, it's weird.
There's a lot of rumor, and I'm going to go on record and say Phase 3 is going to have the crossover, but there's a lot of rumor that there's a lot of behind the scenes wrangling going on right now about bringing Sony's own properties and Marvel's own properties back together finally, so that you'll start seeing X-Men and Avengers and Spider-Man and all those characters start to cross into each other's movies now instead of this clear division between them.
Yeah, that sounds pretty bonkers.
Wow. I think the real reason, what they're saying is like, we want to maintain integrity, blah, blah, blah. And I think the real reason is the Avengers made $6 billion. And Sony went, whoa, we would like to have some of that $6 billion, yes, please. And Marvel went, sure, just give us some ownership over the properties so that like we can work this out. Like, I think Marvel's going to have creative say, essentially, and then Sony's going to make money. And then everybody's going to be fine with it. And you'll start seeing Spider-Man pop up in the Avengers like he should. And that's the other stuff.
So many people said to me, in the Avengers, when they had the big New York battle, everyone was like, where was Peter Parker? Where was Spider-Man? And I was like, they could have just signed something to let him in there for 20 seconds, just getting knocked out like an idiot or something,
I think we're seeing it. I think that the walls are starting to break down because there's so much money to be made that Sony and Marvel are just going like, all right, let's work this out, And I think also with the kind of financial power of Disney behind Marvel, you're going to see these properties start to meld back together. So
that would be incredible.
Super cool.
Well, I guess while we're talking about that, not to drag this topic on forever, but Bryan Singer did say that Quicksilver is going to be in Days of Future Past.
Right.
So the character of Quicksilver is definitely going to be in both. Here I am saying both wrong again. in both properties. Quicksilver is going to be in both properties. That just sounds wrong. I sound Canadian when I say it that way.
In both
properties.
In both properties.
So who knows if it's going to be the same actor or what's going to happen, but that's just interesting that we'll see two versions of Quicksilver next year. So,
you know what I'm really excited about, though? Halle Berry coming back as Storm.
Oh.
Is that true? Is that happening?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Neat.
Anyways, let's take a break.
Okay.
And then let's review some games.
Yay! Alright, so on travel, I played a game on the 3DS called the Starship Damry, and it's a downloadable title that you can get from the Nintendo eShop for the 3DS. So I would like to talk about it. So,
fantastic. Found the right place, sir.
Yeah, so, when you write an essay, you gotta, tell them what you're gonna tell them, and then tell them what you told them. That's what I'm doing.
I'm just confused because from what I understood, the 3DS was dead. They already lost the war.
The war?
The war.
Well,
maybe that was the Wii U that already lost
the
war.
Oh, okay. That lost the war.
They lost
the war. I don't know. So many things have lost a war. I don't understand.
Although
what's
Warren Spector says not to underestimate. Don't fall asleep on Nintendo, says he. Who
yeah.
only
They're just
money.
waiting yeah. in the wings, tapping their fingers.
Yeah.
One of these guys is going to fuck up and I'm running in that spot.
Pinky to mouth.
Anyways.
So, the Starship Damry is a title published by Level 5 who publishes the wildly popular Professor Layton series. So this game obviously has some sort of puzzly narrative elements to it. So the whole premise of the game is that you wake up on a spaceship and you are trapped in a deep sleep chamber. And from that point on, you basically just have to figure out what is happening on the spaceship and discover like what the fate of the ship and its crew are. And sort of the interesting thing about the game is that the first screen you see, it just says like, this game has no tutorials and it doesn't tell you what to do. Like, you just have to figure it out yourself. So that aspect of the game is really cool. Unfortunately, it is a little short. The game is only about like maybe 2 or 3 hours long to see a majority of the content in the game. Okay. But it is a downloadable title. But it's fascinating. It's difficult to talk about this game because talking about it would sort of ruin why you would play the game.
What do the puzzles consist of?
They're not like puzzles. Like it's not a puzzle like, you know, slide the circuits around to unlock the door. It's not stuff like that. It's just like you wake up in the cold sleep capsule and they're just like, okay, go. And you're like,
so they don't tell you really why the starship has crashed or anything like that.
Right. And because it's
so
like,
you have to discover, that's neat. Does it involve aliens and monsters?
Yeah. Stuff like that. You know, like, but because it's all like touchscreen controls, they don't even really give you controls to play the game. You just wake up in the chamber and you like, you see the perspective, first person perspective of yourself lying in the chamber. And you're like, okay, well, what do I do? You're like, what do I got to do now? And you start like, you start tapping around on the screen, trying to figure out like, oh, can I push that button? Can I push this button? Is there like a computer terminal in here that I can access? And it's like, that's kind of how the game sort of unfolds.
Huh. And interesting.
And then it's weird because like a lot of the narrative sort of takes place after the gameplay. And I guess that's all I can really say about the experience. Like, I would
describe
this is
so mysterious.
It is. I would describe this more as an experience than like a, maybe like a game.
Was it frightening or what was your driving force in actually completing it? Like, did you feel compelled to unravel the mystery of the damn praise or did you
damn pray? yes, it's not like so much that it is scary. It's a mystery and you just keep moving forward because you're like, what is going on this ship? Like, what the hell is happening? And then, you know, like at the end you find out what happened and you're like, oh, you know, like that kind of thing. So
that's cool.
I think it's like,
sorry,
it's like $8 in the eShop. And, so, I mean, it's hard to strongly recommend it just because of the time that it takes to play the game and the price, but I definitely think it is worth playing. So if anything that I just described sounds interesting, I would recommend playing it. I also wrote a review, so you can check that out on nerdappropriate.com.
Excellent. I have read the review, and it was intriguing.
It's hard to talk about, like I said. It's hard to talk about the game without spoiling the whole thing. So I would say look it up, check it out in the eShop, and see if it's something that's interesting to you. But I think it's worth experiencing what it is. Ash, Borderlands yes. 2 addiction.
It is kind of like a sick addiction. I think at this point, it kind of like I've played through the campaign so many times at this point. I just kind of know where everything is, and I don't even have to read like the missions. I know exactly where to go and like what to do and what to kill and like what missions I have to do to get what guns. It's like basically at this point, I have the entire game committed to memory.
But it's like a testament because you still enjoy playing the game.
I do. I still really, really like it. When I saw that the Tiny Tina DLC is coming out at the end of the month, and then we're getting Ashley Birch to come back on the show after E3, I was like, well, maybe I'll try out this new Borderlands 2 stuff and kind of get, you know, re-enthused for the franchise. Not that I ever really lost enthusiasm, but I mean, there's a lot of games out and you can't just keep playing the same one.
Like
so
Fast 3 multiplayer.
Yeah, right.
Like we
exactly.
did for a while.
We did that for quite a while. So I downloaded the DLC, which was not included with the season pass. It costs about $10. I was really, really apprehensive to like play through the beginning of the campaign again because up to the point, and this isn't really a spoiler at this point, up to the point where something happens with Bloodwing, those early missions are hard for me to keep doing over and over again. After the Bloodwing stuff, everything moves so quickly, and the fights...
Like the narrative picks up.
Yeah, the narrative picks up. The fights become more difficult. They allow you to use, you know, your abilities a little bit more. In the beginning, the
Bloodwing stuff's where you go to the zoo thing and you're like rescuing. So that is a really, that's where I got stuck and I stopped playing when I was soloing. Yeah. So that's like, that is a very weird, hard part, right? I'm not just crazy. No,
it is. And get past that part, the game picks up and goes like sort of crazy until the end, which is great. So once I got past that part, I started really, really enjoying the experience again and have been playing a lot. But in terms of the DLC itself, Krieg is a brand new character. He plays a little bit like Brick from the first Borderlands. So he's melee based, except for you're rewarded for actually killing enemies. So if you use his special ability, which he basically picks up this big bladed weapon and like kind of runs toward the enemy, like swinging like a maniac. If you get a kill with his main melee weapon, all your health is restored. And that's just his basic, like his basic ability. So it encourages you to kind of like run into enemy fire and get shot up while you're hacking away at enemies to try and kill as many as you can. Also, his ability recharges by getting shot and by having no shields. So you're kind of always trying to put yourself in harm's way. Awesome. It really is like the Berserker class. If you've ever played as Zero before, Zero's melee is like a really, you have to be very, very, very tactical and kind of cunning on how you hit enemies, because if your stealth breaks and you're surrounded by enemies, you'll die as Zero, and that's pretty much it. With Krieg, if you run into a group of enemies and you hack a bunch up and then you die, he has another ability where instead of just dying from being shot up, he'll actually pull out a big stack of dynamite and he'll kind of, you know, light the fuse on the dynamite and blow himself up. And if you die from exploding an enemy, you get resurrected again.
Well, that sounds
so you
awesome.
Can just keep going down and like hacking and blowing up. So it's just a wild, like action packed way of fighting. It's basically the opposite of like a Zero sniper tree. It's like you're up in front and you're just blowing things up and running around like a maniac. Incredibly fun to play. If you haven't checked it out, definitely worth $10. If you're curious about the character himself, Gearbox did something really, really cool. They put out a short film that's about 4 minutes long called A Meat Bicycle Built for Two. And it's the story of Krieg's origin and how he gets recruited to be a vault hunter. And it's really, really well done. Since Krieg is a psycho, you kind of wonder, well, how does one of the enemies actually end up becoming a vault hunter? How does he figure into this story about this, you know, this group of enemies trying to stop Jack, or a group of heroes trying to stop Jack. Mm-hmm. And it does a really good job of explaining that in 4 minutes and has some incredible animation and great voice acting. And so definitely check out Meat Bicycle Built for Two, and then that will probably prompt you to quickly download the Krieg DLC.
So let's talk, Matt, about the game whose title I can never remember.
Yes. So and I guess full disclosure, we got some games from Cryptozoic to play, and we are going to do some reviews ongoing the next few weeks of these three games. But the first one we decided to try out is called Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards Duel at Mount Skullsfire. It is a card game, essentially, where you play as a wizard who's battling with up to six other wizards around a table. You kind of put together these chain spells. And there's an initiative process where it goes around the table and the person with the highest initiative gets to go first, and then it kind of resolves through that initiative number the rest of the time. And your entire goal is to kill the other wizards and be the last one standing. And if you are the last one standing, you get a little championship token. You get two of those, games over, that person wins. Short of calling it insane, I really don't know. Like the artwork is straight out of, if you ever watched Adult Swim and watched I think it's called Super Prison, or maybe if
it
you
looks
watched
like Adventure Time too.
Yeah, Adventure Time or Cartoon Network, there's a not Cartoon Network, Comedy Central, there's a show about this guy who lives in New York and he lives with a zombie and there's like a wizard that he talks to. It's that it's like this new kind of style, like Beavis and Butthead almost style artwork, but like crazier and a little more fidelity.
It reminds me of stuff that Ash draws.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen any of the stuff that Ash draws and we post on Instagram or on Twitter, that's
why,
like,
I love the art. Yeah, I was like,
it's exactly what it is. I mean, the wizards' names were, what was mine was, if everybody can remember their wizard name, mine was Faye Ticklebottom the Enchanter. Does anybody else remember theirs?
I was like Zoltan the Blood Wizard or something like
that. I had like Lady Laser Beam or something. It was just like,
oh,
some
yeah,
kind
you
of,
had,
I made you her sassy. I made her like Foxy Cleopatra in space.
Yes. Oh, we all did voices for our characters.
Right,
too.
Because the thing that is very important, and if you read the instructions, the thing that you have to do is you have to announce your spell.
Do you
want to
talk about how the spells are formed, Scott, and like what that is?
Okay, yeah. So the main game mechanic is to put these spells together and then create havoc within the game. So spells are composed of three parts, and then the cards themselves like are each of the parts of the spell. So you draw a hand of eight, and then you look at the cards in your hand, and you try to figure out if you can get this three-card spell put together. And the thing that's really cool about the cards and the artwork and the game mechanic is that when you put one of each card together, it creates sort of like one mega card, and then there's a banner that goes along the middle of the three cards that create the spell. So, for example, like you could cast a spell that's called like Sir Lutzor's Mysterious Exorcism. So, like each of the three phrases comes from each of the cards.
Yeah,
and the thing that's cool is that the artwork for all of the cards like all fit together to create like one big picture.
And each one of those cards usually will do like a different thing. So the first one will maybe like buff the rest of the spell or maybe heal you. And then the middle one's usually like verbiage as to what the enchantment will do. And then the third one's usually damage, like a lot of times. It seemed like that was kind of the way it flowed together. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to play three cards to make the spell. You can play less cards. And it's kind of part of the strategy, because the less cards you play, the higher in initiative you might go. But as I learned when playing with six players total, sometimes you will make that gamble and then die before you even get to go. Like everybody's spells focused on me, I think, because I won the game before it. And I literally died in a single turn, like did not even get
to play
a single spell before I died. And like I was bummed and mad, but also at the same time, I did make that gamble to go last because all of my cards affected everybody who went ahead of me. So it was like, each wizard that went ahead of you gets three damage. Each wizard that's ahead of you gets this. The strongest wizard gets this. So I was like, oh, if I go last, I have a better chance of doing more in my turn.
The game is just like a giant time bomb that detonates like on the table, you know?
No, it's definitely fast, and like you can get very creative with your spells and how you set things up. There's a lot of, if you've ever played Magic the Gathering, it's a little bit like that in that you're actually trying to set up combos and things of that nature and you know, kind of preying upon your opponent's weaknesses in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The other thing that I should mention is that the instructions explicitly state that you announce the spell, which I think we took to maybe a level above what they wanted it to be, or maybe they hoped it would be this, you know, like, because I think the other thing I should mention is that the three of us played, but we all played with our wives, and it was a game that not like only us, but our wives got into as well. Like my wife doesn't do a lot of gaming, but she enjoyed playing this game. So I think that speaks to the accessibility of a game like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we should also say we played in public. We actually went to like a local,
Winchester.
A bar/coffee shop. Yeah. It's like a weird place that we have here in Orlando, but we went there and set up at a table and played. Props to your wife, by the way, Scott, for actually doing that with all of us.
Yeah, I understand.
She stuck out. She did it. She had fun, I think, at the end. We played through two full games, and I want to say it took us probably about 2 hours, maybe two and a half tops, to play through two full games.
And they would go faster now that we have a handle on the rules, you know.
Yeah, they go a little faster. One of the other things the game does is if you get booted out early, the earlier you get booted out of the game, you actually get these, they're called dead wizard cards, and what they do is buff you for the next game. So like it'll say like you'll start the game with 8 cards, or you'll get a treasure right away at the beginning of the next game. And treasures are kind of like permanents that sit out next to you and buff you while you're playing. which was good. It helped you kind of not feel like a total loser for dying immediately in the first round, because by the time you get to the next game, you've got like four or five things that are going to happen immediately just for you being dead, which was pretty awesome. All in all, I think, you know, maybe a couple balancing quirks. I think we played with too many people. I think once it got down to like four wizards, it was a little bit faster and a little bit more easy to handle.
I think that's the sweet spot is four.
Yeah, four seemed like the number to be at. Six was a little much and a little long. But it was a blast. I loved it. The art was fun as hell, and everything was just, it was goofy to play and just enjoy. So anybody else got some closing comments, or is it?
No, it was definitely a lot of fun. I would encourage people to run out and pick it up. I absolutely loved the artwork. I absolutely loved how fast and kind of ridiculous it was. You can really, there's a lot of planning that can go into like planning your spells and your attacks, and really it is kind of fast paced and wild, but at the same time it forces you to use your brain, which I liked a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will try to do our best to link to it in the show notes to buy, and it's on Amazon for like $20, I think.
Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards Duel at Mount Skulls Fire.
Correct.
So find that. Check it out. It was fun. So next up in the reviews, we have a game called Combo Crew. And Combo Crew is made by our buds, our now friends, over at the Game Bakers, who made the game Squids that we love for iOS and mobile platforms. So their new game is Combo Crew, and it's, I think I would describe it best as like a love letter to the beat 'em up games of like the late 80s and the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Totally retro styled. It's a fighting game, and there's like the story is ridiculous. It's like this guy, Mr. Boss, invites you over to his tower, and then he traps you in a tower, and you have to fight your way up to escape and show him that you're the best fighter in the world. And
I love that his name is Mr. Boss.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's totally like tongue in cheek and everything, but the gameplay is sort of like a little more technical than you might think it is, like than it looks on the surface. And that's what I'm starting to learn as I play through it. So getting back to something Matt talked about earlier with on-screen controls on iOS, this game has none. So
that's awesome.
The way that this works, it's all like gesture based and it's all swipe based. So if you want to attack an enemy, you swipe on them, and if you can swipe like up, down, left, or right, and that's one, you know, one of four different moves. And then you can also do two finger swipes to do like special moves, like special combo attacks that you can unlock as you progress through the game. So
you can basically set what moves you do with different swipes, correct?
Yeah, so the one finger swipes are always like set, and then the two finger swipes are like your special moves that you can designate. And as you progress through the game and the game's different modes, you unlock more of those combos to customize like your move set.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because it all, like, once you start to get the hang of it, it becomes like sort of a more skillful, like fruit ninja, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you say it starts with you two characters to choose from the beginning, right? With more that are unlockable.
Yeah. So the game has two characters, and it's sort of like your classic, like, well-rounded guy, and then your fast, quick-hitting, like, ninja female character. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of like a heavier dude, like, slower-moving, hard hits. And then there's actually a character from Squids, sort of like a homage to a character from the previous game, which is really neat.
Nice. I love that studio a lot.
Yeah.
So have you actually gotten to the top of the tower yet?
No, I haven't. And here's the problem why, and this is what slows me down, is that there is a recognition for perfecting every level. And
oh no.
Yeah. So like there's 35 levels in the game.
Yeah.
And perfecting a level means that you maintain a combo throughout. So basically
the entire level?
Yes.
Holy shit.
So you
Holy
have to
crap.
And the two ways that your combo can break is that if you don't strike somebody like after a period of time, which is most of the time unlikely, and then the other is if you get hit. So
you can, right now you're getting to the point where you can clear entire levels without getting hit.
Right, but like we're talking about like I mean, I'm only at like level like 15 or so, but at that level we're talking about like 300 hit combos, you know, to get through the level.
That's incredible. In terms of the animation and how fluid and such, what would you say to people that like haven't really taken a look at Combo Crew? Like, how does it look?
I would say that the art, like if you looked at Squids, like it's not the same art style, but it's the same level of polish. So the animations for the fighting are great, and I think that's because of their dedication to the genre. So when we got a chance to talk to them at PAX East recently, and Emmerich, who is the lead designer, is like a really big fan of these old beat 'em up games. So like getting everything right, I think, was very important to him. So, you know, there is attention to detail in the animations of the combos and what those combos do. So there are combos that do things like set up juggles, and there are combos that specifically will break guards, and then combos that specifically deal like a lot of quick hits, like a Chun Li kind of hit, you know, something like that, like the flash kick. So animation looks great. It really does play into the gameplay strategy, because sometimes an animation will telegraph an enemy's attack before they actually attack. So to transition a little bit, the way that you maintain a combo is that if an enemy is about to attack you, they sort of get this like exclamation point above their heads, and you counter the attack by tapping anywhere on the screen, which is harder than it sounds when you're trying to do all the other things in the game. Because if you're in the middle of a combo, you can't just tap the screen. Like, the combo has to resolve for you to like still register the counterattack on a different enemy. So it turns out to like, on the surface, it looks very simple, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to sort of quote unquote button mash, but it then becomes something much different, I think, as you progress through. So
that's awesome though.
Yeah.
I don't think there's actually anything like it on iOS right now.
I don't think there is. And the other thing I wanted to touch on is the social aspects of the game. So what they really want you to do with Combo Crew is that there is sort of an endless mode after you do like the story mode. So in the endless mode, it's all about like score attack, completing as many levels as you can without dying, and like unlocking more combos and just kind of like exploring the game more. So the way that this works is that you fight waves and enemies, but let's say you get to wave 10, but on wave 10 you get knocked out, so your health bar is completely depleted. What you can do is you can go to your friends list and you can say, hey, I died on this level, can you help me out? So then your friend comes in, fights the level for you, and then if they successfully complete the level, you regain some of your health, and then you continue on to like level 11. So like you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the game continues like with you and your friends fighting together, and then you can jump into your friends' games and help them, unlocking more combos and more characters, and there's items that you can customize the experience with a little more. So it's like, it's a very well-rounded experience that you can either enjoy on a casual level or sort of at this deeper tactical level.
That's cool.
So I would encourage.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're so awesome. And this game, I think, is only like $3 on iOS. What's up?
Good. No, good.
I was going to say that they also have controls for like iPads and the iPhone. So like a two-finger swipe on the iPad would be difficult on an iPhone, because you're basically covering the whole screen. But you can do like two thumb controls, like if you're holding it in your hands. So you can do like, the controls are different. You'll just have to see it. But I'm saying it works. So I would definitely say check it out. Combo Crew is awesome. The Game Bakers are great people. And I wholeheartedly think that as an indie development studio, they're worth supporting. So check out Combo Crew, available on Android and iOS with cross-platform play.
They also released all their stuff, or I don't know about all, but they released
Squids
on Windows Phone.
Oh, cool. So and maybe Combo Crew will come there as well.
I think so, because I think they said they built it with Unity, and it might be heading that way, but
Aw,
who
snap.
Knows for sure.
Breaking news.
Breaking the news. So community fans rejoice through the magic of, magic of spells.
Joel McHale.
Yeah, from the magic of Joel McHale. Dan Harmon is returning to Community a showrunner for the final season. So
thank God.
I am assuming that, like, this is just me assuming that a lot of him leaving had to do with his relationship with Chevy, and that kind of led to a lot of infighting. And from what we hear, Chevy more than likely won't be back for the last season. He won't?
No, he won't. They already made jokes about it. Like, they were, so through this, this started on last, what did I tell you, Ash, on like Monday?
Yeah.
On Monday, he does this podcast, which everybody should listen to because it's just an insane hour of podcasting. It's called Harmontown. And he leaked on Harmontown that he was in talks with Sony and NBC to come back and run the final season of Community.
How cool is that? And maybe the movie too, right?
I don't know why everybody needs movies for TV shows. I don't understand.
It's like the joke, six seasons in a movie.
Yeah. This is supposedly definitely the final season, season five, but you never know. I guess if they take off in ratings, maybe they'll come up, but yeah. So he basically accidentally said like, "Oh yeah, I'm talking about coming back." And then he realized what he said. And he was like, "Cut that out of that can't be in the podcast. Like, cut it out." And then like 10 minutes later, he's like, "Ah, screw it, leave it in. I don't care." And then when that came out, everybody started freaking out about it. And then you know, of course, those talks kept happening. And then now he's confirmed that he's coming back. But he made a joke somewhere in there. He's like, yeah, we'll bring Chevy back too. And then he was like, nah, I'm just kidding. Chevy's never coming back.
Wow, that's awesome.
But anyway, for Community fans, that's great news. I mean, this show has been struggling since the beginning.
Yes.
And it's produced some really incredible, funny stuff. So we wish them tons of luck. And we are glad that, you know, it's at least going to get to finish in great form. And if it does really well this season, who knows, maybe they will finally get that sixth season.
I hope some of the writers come back too, because like there was almost a full crew walkout in that show. So
yeah that hope, last season that was, means a little, it was a little hard to swallow the last season.
Yeah, it was a little rough.
But
so finally we all played Fuse.
We did. So Insomniac put out Fuse this week, and we all decided to pick it up and kind of make it a group playing experience. So we're not really kind of playing it solo. We're only playing it when at least some of us can get online and we can go through the campaign together. Mm-hmm. For those of you who haven't played Fuse, it's four-player co-op, third-person cover-based shooter. That's a lot of stuff, but that's what it is. Each character has different ability sets, different special moves, kind of a la Mass Effect multiplayer, maybe with a little bit less variety, I guess, is the right word. Mm-hmm. But so each character is unique, and they all have something to bring to the table. How have you guys been liking it?
I am pleasantly surprised, and I think I was pleasantly surprised before I played the demo. And then I didn't read the reviews, but I sort of like saw some of the reviews. And then once we started playing the game, I just didn't see it. Like, I thought the game was better. I think the game is better than what the reviews are. Like, I don't understand what the beef is, but I don't want to know what the beef is, I suppose. Like,
yeah,
I'm having a lot of fun. And I really like the thing I like most about the game, just to keep it short, is that I like the pace of the game. I like how fast it moves. Like,
it is very fast.
Like, you have the ability to slide to cover. All of the characters are like incredibly agile. You can kind of like run and dive and mantle over cover, and you can do something I love, which is grabbing. Like, there's a grapple system, so you can grab enemies over cover, which is awesome, and assassinate them. And then there's even like some stealth elements where you can like walk up behind people and just take them out. And I think the pacing of the game for me is what makes it awesome.
The stealth is a little weird.
No, it's not Splinter Cell. No,
it's literally like walking up behind them and killing them, which is fine, but the line between being stealth and not being stealth is hard to know.
Yes.
So we did have a couple times where we would like walk up behind somebody and then they would just turn around and start firing on us, and we're like, all I did was walk, you know.
Usually it was me like bringing the shit storm. I'm like, I'll just go up there and kill that guy, and like, no, you won't.
I really enjoyed the game, but that my caveat would be that I really enjoy it in the same way that when Scott and I play Army of Two, I enjoy playing that game. Like, I enjoy the co-opness of it, and the mechanics are all fine. They're not, there's nothing, I think the thing with it is there's nothing like standout mind-blowing about the game. Everything is just like, it all kind of works, and it plays well, and it's paced decently, you know. Like, there's nothing that I was like, oh shit, that feature is the thing that makes this game amazing. And instead I'm just kind of like, but mine's also a pretty narrow view. I've only played one of the chapters, you guys have played two. I don't know if the getting further into the Fuse stuff really amps up the play, if it really makes it that much better or not. My weapon was the bow, the sort of like Chewbacca-esque the bowcaster. But
I think your character is like really opens up once you unlock more of the skill tree.
Right, because early, like, you guys were all Ash is like slaughtering 15 people with his shield, and Scott's like releasing this hail of bullets, and then I'm like pew pew pew, and you guys are like, use your fuse stuff, and I was like, I don't have anything. Pew pew, and it just felt like I wasn't really doing much. So I ran around with a sniper rifle for most of the level, but I do enjoy it. Like, that's the thing, is like, I'm not finding it annoying or crappy or not playable or anything. I really enjoy the game. It's not standout yet to me.
Yeah. I think just since you brought up the game, like, for example, the newest Army of Two game, like, I played the demo twice and we played it together.
Like, it feels like they're just crapping it out now. They're just like, yeah, here's an Army of Two.
Yeah, to be honest with you, that game felt like super generic compared to even the previous Army of Two game, which at least had a little humor and like the characters like had a little depth to them. In comparison, I think Fuse is a better game. Like, Fuse is a solid title, like, and it's better than what that Army of Two demo was. You know what I mean? Like, the characters are humorous, and like, I kind of like the sci-fi aspect of the game and sort of the things that you can do with the abilities as you upgrade the skill tree.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a lot, and this game suffers from one thing that I think a lot of games that try and add skill trees suffer from. You have to cater to an audience that may not be willing to sit there for like 5 or 6 hours to unlock the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So the people that aren't willing to, you know, dig into the skill tree, they're only going to get what's at face. They're only going to see the beginning of the game without any of the cool bells and whistles. So, I mean, my advice, just as someone who's played a lot of games, is give players a lot of cool stuff in the beginning as well, but then just add even more cool stuff as you progress. Like, don't bar characters from the ability to use, like, you know, the bells and whistles of their powers for 5 or 6 hours, and then all of a sudden, you know, let them do it later on. It should be open from the very beginning, and then later on you should get even cooler stuff.
I'm surprised that we did not have our base powers right at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I thought you guys kind of did, didn't you? I mean, your guys' stuff did things, I felt like. Mine was literally a gun.
No.
It was literally a gun that did nothing different from having any other gun in the game for the entire first chapter.
I had to, right? Well, yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
it's weird because all the characters are designed a little differently, you know?
Right, and on purpose. I'm just saying that, like, your guys' stuff started to manifest itself, I feel like, well before my guy did. Like, why couldn't my bows charge and explode almost immediately?
Yeah, you,
like,
should have had that right from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I had to get to level 9 or 7, 8, I think, to get that power, which is, like, it was the entire first chapter to get to level 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just like, why didn't I pick up the thing? And even if they sucked, like, even if it didn't do a ton of damage, it's just like, oh, this is the feature of this weapon, I'd be like, oh, I get it. But instead it was like, here's a pew-pew gun and like, good luck. Like, see you in a little bit. And that kind of felt weird. It just felt like a letdown somewhat, like you're saying, Ash. Like, give it to me. Just let me play it right away.
Yeah, yeah. But then once you do have those abilities, the game, for me, is incredibly fun. Like, the character I'm playing as is sort of the tank character. He can produce force fields that I can, like, lay out, you know, in different fields of fire to, like, block enemy attacks and to also, like, boost our own attacks. So it allows you to be really tactical as a team and, like, you know, protect people and do all sorts of cool stuff. And I feel like, you know, that to me is really neat. I love co-op games where you have an assigned role and you have something that you're supposed to do.
I will say the boss fights were hella fun. Like, and I will use the word hella.
Hello.
They were like super challenging, and even the lead ups to the boss fights, like some of those like brawl out, like where the explodey guys were running at us, and like it was all super enjoyable. And that's like, I don't want my negatives to come off as like I hated this game. Like, I really enjoyed playing it. It just felt like a little much like, oh, I wish I could have done this earlier or like had something special about my guy other than just like running and gunning. So,
yeah.
The game really shines as a cooperative tactical experience, although it's not always apparent to you how to make the tactical parts work. But we discovered things like Ash alluded to the fact that his gun has a shield, like a mag shield. And we can get behind the mag shield for cover, but we can also shoot through the mag shield for bonus damage. Mm. And then Ash's wife played a character and I played a character whose guns were more like controlling weapons so they would like lock enemies down. But then those enemies could be further affected by other people's like weapon fire or like melee attacks and stuff.
Yeah, it allows you to do some interesting combos and such. So, and there's also a vertical element, like your characters can scale certain walls and crawl through air vents and things like that. And in terms of the narrative, I'm actually enjoying it. It's mm-hmm. like a tactical spy, like secret agent type of story, which is different these yeah. days. It's not like a Call of Duty war story. It's all about, you know, espionage and spying and high tech arms dealing and things like that, which is different. And the voice acting is great. We I know we said this before, but it has the voices of Jennifer Hale from Mass Effect and Ali Hillis from Mass Effect and Final Fantasy. And and so far, I think it's great. The banter between the characters is a lot of fun. They tease each other. They mm-hmm. seem to have like a good relationship.
A repartee, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. You care about these people. I think they did a great job. And I'm not going to say what outlet, but the first outlet that I read put out the review very, very early once the embargo was lifted. And it got a 4 out of 10.
That's brutal, dude.
And this is before I had played the game. And I was like, well, fuck, that's not good. And then other stuff started coming out. And other outlets were giving it 8s out of 10 and a couple 9s and a couple 7s. And now it's kind of evened out. But when I saw that 4, I was like, what fucking games are you guys playing that this yeah. is a 4? And like once I started playing, I'm like, this is fun. Like how pissed off were you yeah. like, to give it a 4? Like
this game is like fun as hell. It has a
come on. Like, oh, that's ridiculous.
I thought like even there's sort of a Bulletstorm-esque experience point system. While not as ridiculous, the game rewards you for killing enemies in specific ways. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of different ways for you to tackle problems. And if you play with different characters, I'm sure the experience would be different as well. You mm-hmm. know, I don't, like, I just don't see a 4. You know what I mean? Like, I see somewhere in the C to B minus range. You know, like, it's a solid yeah. game and it's yeah, a lot of yeah, fun to play. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's lacking in some polish. Some of the level design is repetitive. A lot of the hallways look kind of similar to one another. We've been inside some industrial base for the entire game so far. I think we're just finally getting out of there.
Oh, we are still in the second chapter?
We are still in some sort of weird... Oh, actually, we're in an underground, like, sea lab or something.
Yeah, I think every chapter is in a different environment, if you
yeah.
will.
Yeah. We did hit some glitches, too, which might be some reasons why people are giving it a little bit of lower score.
Yeah, it was a little weird when we hit those.
Yeah.
A couple of them. A couple, like, game-breaking ones, but then a couple that were not a big deal. So
yeah.
And checkpoints not going off and
right.
yeah. weapons not being able to be drawn.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Like, we overcame those pretty quickly. It's not like yeah, throw the controller at the TV, you know, like... I just think maybe the review was too, like the external reviews were maybe a little too harsh on this.
The weapons not being drawn one was funny though, because it was like literally the first real battle we got in as a team, and like we walk in this room and then all these guys just like come in through the windows and start shooting at us, and we were so confused. We were like, "Are we not supposed to draw here? What's happening? Are we supposed to die?" And then we just died, and then we came back and we were like drew our weapons immediately. And we're like, "Oh, it just you know."
I ran up with the melee attacks. Have you seen like the combat melee animations? Not the stealth ones, but like the combat ones.
They're awesome.
They're good, yeah.
They're great. Like, I mean, there's just so much to like about this game that I don't understand why some of those reviews are so harsh. Like, despite like some of the bugs that persist in the game, like,
I will say this did, I kind of did feel like this was maybe a $40, $50 game and not a $60 game.
Sure, I can see that, but yeah. I mean, like,
it just feels a little like under. It feels a little underdone.
But we're spoiled. You know what I mean? We're spoiled yeah. by like BioShock and Mass Effect. It's not a BioShock.
Well, I mean, it's so weird because it's like I feel like BioShock should be like an $80 game. You know, like it's not necessarily this shouldn't be a $60 game. It's just that like maybe the other games should be a lot more expensive, and we are spoiled. You know, like yeah.
well, maybe the next generation will actually allow for games of you know. They'll look at how much money was spent on production and then equate that to the sale price. I mean, that would be wonderful. It's kind of being done with indie stuff now, but in terms of like large studio stuff, it's like $60 or nothing, you know?
I've actually read though that $60 mark is basically a fake. Like, it's basically games that aren't $60 that should be $40 are supporting the games that are $60 that should be $80. Like, yeah. like there's a balancing act going on there that's like, look, this game we spent $20 million making this game mm-hmm. and we're going to sell it to you for $60. Like, you know, versus we spent $4 million making this game and we're going to sell it to you for $60. So
Yeah,
and I think there's some of that going on.
This game wasn't made by like a small developer. I mean, it was made by Insomniac Games. They make shit like Ratchet and Clank. You know what I mean? And
it was
and
very
Resistance.
Good. I really don't mean to be the pooper of the party. I'm just saying that like it was good. Is pooper of a party is a new thing, by the way.
pooper of the party.
It's very good. I really loved it. I loved co-oping it. Like I think you kind of have to go through this game.
I equate this to like a fun summer popcorn movie. You know,
there you go. Absolutely.
Temper your expectations and walk in with like the perspective of like, I'm going to have fun with this game and blow shit up and it's going to be lighthearted and the humor, you know, all that stuff. And we're just going to have fun.
I mean, I literally bought it sight unseen. Like Scott was like, get Fuse. I was like, okay. And I just like literally like went on my phone and just purchased it.
And there
Amazon.
Is a demo. You can download a demo for anyone that's listening. Like I would encourage everyone to at least try it, you know?
Right. But I'm saying I bought it sight unseen and then played it. And I wasn't like, oh God, what am I doing? Like I played it. I was like, oh, it was awesome. It was fun. So
yeah,
I'm just a fucking sucker for those third person cover based shooters, man. I love them. They're so much fun.
And my guy is the voice of Cyborg from Teen Titans.
Yeah, for real.
Carrie Payton, I think.
Yeah, Carrie Payton. He's a cool guy.
He's awesome. Sweet. I love that. I was like playing and I was like, God, I know this voice. I know this voice. And like in the middle of the game, I was like, it's Cyborg. And I was like, yeah, it's the guy from Cyborg. And I was like, awesome.
So any concluding remarks about Fuse? I like it. I'm having fun.
Yeah, I think like my big thing is in life, if you can, try stuff out for yourself and don't necessarily listen to some of the big outlets' reviews, because a lot of times they're being controlled and manipulated by the man. So you gotta go with your gut. And, you know, that's why I think, try games like this out, even though you may not, there may not be getting the best press. It's still definitely worth it.
I feel like they didn't even get a lot of advertising for this game either.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're coming out at a weird time.
But like, I'm saying, like, it's not like we didn't even see a lot of, like, buzz about this being built before this game came out. And I think that's what hurt this a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
So Fuse, play it. It's fun. If you want to play with us, let us know. Maybe we can find a way to make that happen.
For real.
Sweet. Okay.
For real.
We'll be back after a break, and we're going to go and read something from the mail sack.
So today we neglected an aquato. Let's just admit it, guys. We forgot to put an aquato out.
Forget?
I don't know if we forgot. I actually didn't know what day of the week it was until yesterday.
Yeah. It has been, as we've said on previous few episodes, it's been a weird month for podcasting for us. A lot of schedules all over the place. Oh, a lot of things going on work-wise and... You know, sometimes you just don't have a catchy Naquato to send out into the atmosphere, and we didn't have one this time. So instead of putting a lackluster Naquato out, we made the decision to not do that to you guys. We will not put out crappy Naquatos. Mm-hmm. We won't. It's not worth it. It's not
we
won't
put them out again.
Don't say again, ever. Everyone up to
We've
now
had
has
106
been,
amazing Naquatos.
We have we have a gold standard for Naquatos, and nothing reached our gold standard this week.
It usually consists of frantic text messages on Thursday.
No!
What do we have? Do we have anything
vetting,
to ask about?
There's a vetting process that our Naquatos go through, and we just didn't have the time to get a gold standard Naquato. It happens, guys. Sometimes it happens.
Okay.
But we did receive an email from longtime listener and friend of the podcast, Robert Freemering. And as we always love emails, we tell you guys to send them to us. We are going to, I'm going to give you the gist of his email, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. But he was kind of responding to our Xbox One.
Wait, this segment is called The Mail Sack.
Ash, do you want to spell it for everybody?
Sure. It is T-H-E, the, M-A-L-E.
Oh, we're so close.
Ah. Mail sack. Blah, blah.
We need mail sack music.
Oh, no.
We do. It just needs to be like squish sounds. Oh, mail sack.
Oh, my God. So Robert Freeman on Twitter. sent us a letter to our mail sack. But he kind of commented on what we were talking about with the Xbox One and you know, I'll give you the read. It says, I'm thinking the same account on 360 and Xbox One. So basically you'll be able to keep your account on both things, he thinks, and that you know, he thinks they may limit your viewing up. So like he says, like on the Vita, you don't see what is happening on the PS3, but on the PS3, you can see what's happening on the Vita. So maybe that kind of same system will happen on Xbox Live, where the 360 might see what you're doing like on a one account, but the one might not see what's going on a 360 since it wouldn't be able to go down, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. He also said that this is kind of why I wanted to read it, because I hadn't thought of this, and I really like this idea. But basically, Amazon Kindle has this feature where you can lend a book to somebody for 14 days and they can try it out for free and play it for 14 days and then read the book for 14 days and then you no longer have access to it. It goes back to your system in Kindle. And you actually, when you lend it, don't have access to the book at the same time. So Kindle kind of manages it. So, and he was like, he thinks it'd actually be awesome, and I agree, if you could lend your digital games over Xbox Live to your friends. So like if I bought a game and I really loved it and I wanted Ash to try it out, I could say, here, Ash, try this game out. You know, 14 days, you can go ahead and try it and play it as much as you want. And then when you're done with it, it's mine again under my account. And then I can see, you can see if you like it and purchase it or something like that. I think that's actually kind of awesome for a DRM game.
That's a smashing idea.
So that would be pretty amazing if that did happen. And then he also talked about how he hopes 500 gigs is not the max capacity for the Xbox One. That he made the point that Ni No Kuni for the PS3 was over a 20 gig game.
Wow.
And the idea that 500 gigs is the tops that you can install might be, that's really only, you know, what is that, 25 games, which I currently own more than 25 games in my game collection, so that might be a little bit too small.
I think it is just I feel like it's just a generational thing, you know, because all the consoles, you know, in this sort of current generation, like, get redesigned. So I think that while we may start with, like, a 500 gigabyte Xbox One that looks like a leaf blower, we'll probably end up with something much smaller with a much larger capacity. You know what I mean?
Do you think that they'll leverage cloud stuff eventually so that your cloud storage will get even larger?
Probably. I mean, like, you obviously can't install your games to the cloud, but I do think there will be the cloud storage, and then they'll probably just provide a bigger hard drive in the future. That's what I think.
What if you install the game on the hard drive, right, with your disk, and then you could say remove it, but you could then reinstall from the cloud because you've already bought, and then they're going to manage rights and stuff. Well, no, because as long as that disk didn't get... DRM sucks, everyone. Let's just move on from that conversation.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how Steam works, right? So, like, if you own a game on Steam, you can delete it, and then you can go download it again in the future for as long as they decide to keep their service running, you know?
Yeah. But I thought the borrowing thing was pretty cool. So
I think that's a great idea. I think that would be cool in a way to emphasize social features and, like, maybe spread buzz through, you know, through friends, which is the whole idea.
Plus, it's more than a demo that way. You know, you're not demo limited. You get to actually get the full game for a couple weeks and try it out. And if you beat it, you beat it. You know, and if you don't, oh well. But I think that's a pretty awesome feature that hopefully they'll leverage.
You can shorten the time frame. It could just be like 3 days or 5 days, or just like, you know, Sony does something now where you can play. Like, you can download an entire game on Plus, I think, and then play it for like an hour, like the full game.
Yeah, but I think if you buy the game and you want to let me borrow it for 2 weeks or even a week, I mean, you're not going to be able to play it during those 2 weeks. That's the thing. It's not like we can co-op through the game.
Yeah.
Right.
So like me owning it for 2 weeks, and if I beat it, I mean, like, that's my thing with DRM is companies need to get over the fact that other people are going to get to play their thing for free for a little while. Like, it happens. I'm sorry. It happens. People see your video for free, or they listen to your music for free. You can't fight that part of it. But if you give them easy ways to share and play, and people are still purchasing in that sense, people will buy and do stuff. So,
oh, you're saying if you lower the barrier for purchasing, like you remove barriers to get people access to the game, there's a better chance that they'll buy it instead of like not buy it.
Well, I mean, like, if you give people a better chance to enjoy the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, yeah, you can borrow it for 1 hour, I'm not going to get anywhere in a game in 1 hour. Like, right. I'm going to open it. I'm going to be like, oh, it's a gun game. Game over. I'm gonna be like, oh, okay, that was fun. But like, if I get it for a week or something from you, that gives me time to actually experience and play it. And if the game's good and it's got enough content, then I'm going to want to buy it and keep playing it. Like,
Cool.
That's the whole point of making games, I thought, was so that we could all enjoy them and they had plenty of enjoyment involved.
I concur.
Correct?
Correct.
Ash, agree.
No, I do agree. I mean, I don't know. The whole game lending thing is still weird to me, and obviously it's going to change when this new generation of stuff comes out. We'll have to wait and see what exactly they have planned. But, you know, I want something that's fair for everyone. I want to be able to share it with Scott, but at the same time, I don't want the developers to get screwed because they spend, you know, months and sometimes years of their lives building the things for us to enjoy. So they need to get, you know, what they worked for. So
you know what that was? That was a truth bomb.
Boom. Kapow.
So thank you, Mr. Freemering, Mr. Slick. We always enjoy your input. So thanks for joining in on the podcast and sending in an email.
Yeah.
Now let's close the mail sack, everybody.
What sound does that make?
I don't know.
Close the mail sack.
Oh, man.
So this is actually going to be, believe it or not, a new segment. If you send us mail, you can put it in our mail sack. And we will more than likely read some of them on the show. So,
I'm sure Hillary will have something to say about this segment when she returns.
Oh, yeah. She'll love it.
We would enjoy artwork. You know, that's fine. Anything you want to share with us, we would love to share with the community at large.
Yeah, definitely. So,
and if you do want to send us an email and you don't want it read, just say in the email, please don't read out my name or my email or something, and we will not share.
And also,
it's not forced sharing is what we're saying.
Be careful sharing artwork with us. We don't want any images sent to us, images of perhaps mail sacks or anything
like that. Only Ash wants that.
I do not.
So Ash at nerdappropriate.com.
Send all images to Hillary1L at nerdappropriate.com.
She did say she was looking for some artwork to display in her new mansion.
Yeah,
send her some artwork to display. I think that's great.
All right.
All right, you can put the title of the email, "Have you seen my Batwing?"
Oh, or, no. I don't need pictures, literal pictures.
Would you like to see my new wristwatch?
I meant drawings.
Drawings. Okay.
This art, like artwork drawings.
We're so close to the end, and I feel like we just took a turn right now.
We did. Sorry. All right, guys. As always, thank you for tuning in to episode 107 of the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com. You can follow us on Twitter at nerdappropriate. You can email us all directly. Ash, Hillary1L, Matt, or Scott at nerdappropriate.com, and we may feature one of your emails in our mail sack.
So close.
Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. And next week, we'll be back with special guest Mylan Barrows, and Hillary will be back. And Mylan and Hillary are going to be podcasting from the same room at the same time.
Sounds like trouble.
And
I might actually be on an episode with Mylan again.
Oh my gosh, it has been a while, right?
Hasn't happened since the first.
You guys are not the same person. We've proved it already.
Yeah.
No, we saw each other at PAX and the world did not explode.
Yes.
Or did it?
Find out on the next episode. See ya.
What's your address so people can rob
My
you?
Address is I live on
No.
You should cut that.
It's creating work for me.
Sorry.